fall is a vibe. So, what's yours? Do you go wild? Or get a little nostalgic? Do you like to cozy up indoors? Or kick it outdoors? Whatever you fall for, get shoes that get you. We've got the trend. You bring the vibes. DSW, let us surprise you.
What if you could see what's happening inside your body? Prenuvo's whole body scan screens for hundreds of conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one, all in under an hour. And now, you can go beyond imaging with 80-plus blood biomarkers that help complete the picture. This Labor Day, save $300 off your scan when you book at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com. Save $300 now through September 8th at prenuvo.com. Terms and conditions apply.
People say, "I got you," all the time. Dads say it to their kids the first time they ride a bike. Friends say it to other friends when they buy them lunch. It's a good thing when someone's got you. It's especially good when someone's got you with important things like your health. And that's where WeShare's got you. We got you with a massive nationwide network of over 1 million doctors, which means you can likely keep your current doctor you know and trust. We got you with affordable prices that can save individuals up to $5,000 annually compared to traditional insurance, and save families even more. And we've got you with over 68,000 CVS Caremark pharmacies across the country. If you're tired of overpriced health insurance bills, come visit us at WeShareHealth.org or call 1-888-WeShare. Other smart Americans are making the switch every day. In a world filled with companies that cost you, it's nice to have one that's got you. WeShareHealth. We got you.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This is a true crime roundup from the On Deadline podcast. We explore crime stories reported on by Odyssey's radio newsrooms across the country. I'm your host, Lauren Berry. This week, we're focusing on two major stories: the Lindsay Clancy mistrial and a shooting that broke out in a Minnesota apartment building, leaving two dead and others injured, including police officers. A disgruntled resident of that building has been identified as the shooter in the Minnesota case. We'll hear Odyssey Station WCCO News and Talk react to news about the case breaking in real time. But first, we'll hear real-time reactions to the confusing and somewhat chaotic jury deliberation that ended the controversial trial of Lindsay Clancy, a Massachusetts mother accused of strangling her three children. Clancy's legal team argued that she suffered from the rare postpartum psychosis disorder, and her story opened up a national conversation about postpartum disorders. Just as the public struggled to come up with easy conclusions in the Clancy case, the jury deadlocked, and eventually it ended in a mistrial. Will the prosecution seek another trial? We'll hear legal experts weigh in about the case and what happens next. Before we get into the Clancy case, we also have updates on two cases related to well-known musicians. One involves a legendary rapper. The other involves someone who was an up-and-coming music star, who then became infamous when the body of a teen girl was found in a Tesla registered to him. Here's Odyssey Station KNX News in Los Angeles this week with the latest on David Anthony Burke, who goes by the stage name David, stylized as D4VD.
To downtown LA now, outside a court where the singer David was arraigned, and as expected, he pleaded not guilty to murdering 14-year-old Celeste Rivas Hernandez. But the shakeup was with his legal team. His attorneys are gone. The DA's also been talking. John Baird has been there all morning. He's live with us now. John?
Yeah, it was longer than usual arraignment that I've seen. It was probably twice as long as usual, but they were dealing with the attorney issue, but also the DA laid out the specific charges here. First-degree murder with special circumstances, lewd and lascivious sex acts with a person under 14, and mutilation of human remains. He says the judge held David Anthony Burke to answer for those charges. He entered a not guilty plea, but there were a number of things they dealt with, and DA Nathan Hochman addressed a number of them here outside the courthouse.
The last thing that will have to be decided, and that's a decision by myself as the district attorney, is whether or not we'll be seeking the death penalty in this case. We had invited David Anthony Burke's prior counsel to submit what's called a mitigation packet to the district attorney's office for consideration. A mitigation packet are factors that we are to consider why we should not bring the death penalty in this case.
So again, they haven't made a decision on that. But as far as counsel goes, David Anthony Burke is switching to the public defender's office. He is switching out from his private attorneys, probably, you know, high dollar attorneys, to the public defender's office. And so we're wondering about that because of his music career that started to make him a lot of money. But at this point, it looks...
What if you can see what's happening inside your body? Prenuvo's whole body scan screens for hundreds of conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one, all in under an hour. And now you can go beyond imaging with 80 plus blood biomarkers that help complete the picture. This Labor Day, save $300 off your scan when you book at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com. Save $300 now through September 8th at prenuvo.com. Terms and conditions apply.
People say, "I got you," all the time. Dads say it to their kids the first time they ride a bike. Friends say it to other friends when they buy them lunch. It's a good thing when someone's got you. It's especially good when someone's got you with important things like your health. And that's where WeShare's got you. We got you with a massive nationwide network of over a million doctors, which means you can likely keep your current doctor you know and trust. We got you with affordable prices that can save individuals up to $5,000 annually compared to traditional insurance, and save families even more. And we've got you with over 68,000 CVS Caremark pharmacies across the country. If you're tired of overpriced health insurance bills, come visit us at WeShareHealth.org or call 1-888-WeShare. Other smart Americans are making the switch every day. In a world filled with companies that cost you, it's nice to have one that's got you. WeShare Health. We got you.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
From high school baseball to the men's NCAA College World Series to MLB and all the way to the National Baseball Hall of Fame, how will you make your mark in MLB The Show 26? Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Looks like he's going to switch out to the public defender.
30 years after legendary rapper Tupac was murdered, a man has been found guilty of the slaying. One of the reporters covering the case joined KNX before the verdict was announced.
Let's go to Vegas for the Tupac trial, the Tupac murder trial, because it's already starting to wrap up. Closing arguments will get underway today. This is for Dwayne Keefe D. Davis, and not for firing the shots, but for being the shot caller. We're live now with AP reporter Jessica Hill, who's been covering this.
Jessica, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Are you surprised that this just lasted 2 weeks and you're already getting the closing arguments?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Prosecutors had estimated to have like up to 45 witnesses, and I believe only like 24 have been called. I think that they have run into some difficulties in getting people to come out. I spoke with the defense attorney and he said that some people just, you know, won't come out and testify on their behalf.
Do you think that benefits one side or the other? Because even with the 25, that's still a much longer list than what the defense had.
For sure. Talking with the defense attorney, he seems pretty hopeful. He doesn't think jury deliberation will take very long. And he seems pretty adamant that, you know, his client is just lying and can't be relied upon with his own words.
I mean, what has been your take on the jury? I know it's hard to read them sometimes, but just wondering, since you've been covering the trial, what have you seen from them?
When do they start to scribble furiously in the notebooks, right?
Yeah, it's been like a mix. They've all seemed to pay pretty close attention. I noticed like the autopsy photos were of high like attention for them. But some of these interview recordings that prosecutors played seemed to kind of slow things down. Some people had to, you know, call for a break after a while because I'm sure you've been paying attention, but there's been just like recording after recording after recording in which Duane Davis says basically the same thing over and over again. So some areas have been kind of tiring for these jurors.
Remind us, because we did talk before about this jury, but some of these people after 30 years, they don't really know much about this case. These are not like the Tupac documentary watchers.
Exactly. Yeah. Some of them have like heard of him vaguely. Some of them have heard that he died here. Maybe a few years ago, they had listened to his music. But for the most part, there are quite a few jurors that don't even know who he is.
And really, when it comes to the prosecution, this is really like Keffi D's words coming back to bite him.
Exactly. Yeah, they've relied on previous statements that he made, a lot of media interviews with documentarians, and portions of his own book. And then the defense has basically said that, you know, they've never tried to verify any of these claims and have never been able to prove anything with like actual physical evidence that connects Davis to any of these crimes.
Yeah. So the words could come back to bite him if they bite him, because you've touched on this, but his own defense is painting him as the unreliable narrator, saying, look, I was lying. I wanted some fame. I wanted money, but I didn't actually do all the things. And he's gone so far as to say that he wasn't even in Vegas at the time, after repeatedly saying that, no, he was in the car right next to him, the car that actually, you know, where the shots were fired from.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And prosecution has like tried to show some physical evidence, but we really haven't seen much. One investigator had talked about a hotel bill from Las Vegas that was found in Davis's home. However, we never saw that bill, and we don't know the exact date that bill came from. So there's not too much physical evidence, which the prosecution had been upfront about telling jurors at the very beginning that, you know, what is your definition of evidence? You know, there might be a lack of physical evidence, but, you know, is a man's own words enough to convict him?
Well, we'll find out. AP reporter Jessica Hill, who's been covering this Tupac murder trial in Vegas. Thanks so much.
Now we'll move on to the Lindsay.
A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between thinking about photography school and selling your portraits online. It's the difference between giving away those cookies you just made for free and running your cookie empire. A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between having a movie reviewing hobby and a movie reviewing career. Squarespace, because no matter what you're into, a website makes it real. Use offer code THEDIFFERENCE for 30% off select plans. Terms and conditions apply.
What if you could see what's happening inside your body? Prenuvo's whole body scan screens for hundreds of conditions, including many solid tumors, as early as stage one, all in under an hour. And now, you can go beyond imaging. With 80-plus blood biomarkers that help complete the picture, this Labor Day, save $300 off your scan when you book at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Save $300 now through September 8th at Prenuvo.com. Terms and conditions apply.
People say, I got you, all the time. Dads say it to their kids the first time they ride a bike. Friends say it to other friends when they buy them lunch. It's a good thing when someone's got you. It's especially good when someone's got you with important things like your health. And that's where WeShare's got you. We got you with a massive nationwide network of over 1 million doctors, which means you can likely keep your current doctor you know and trust. We got you with affordable prices that can save individuals up to $5,000 annually compared to traditional insurance, and save families even more. And we've got you with over 68,000 CVS Caremark pharmacies across the country. If you're tired of overpriced health insurance bills, come visit us at WeShareHealth.org or call 1-888-WeShare. Other smart Americans are making the switch every day. In a world filled with companies that cost you, it's nice to have one that's got you. WeShare Health. We got you.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
From high school baseball to the men's NCAA College World Series to MLB and all the way to the National Baseball Hall of Fame, how will you make your mark in MLB The Show 26? Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Clancy murder trial. Clancy allegedly killed her three young children and attempted to take her own life by falling out of a window at her home. She remains paralyzed. Clancy's defense team has argued that she was suffering from postpartum psychosis. and she has described hearing voices that told her to kill her children. Leading up to the tragedy, Clancy did seek mental health care and was prescribed multiple medications. Though the jury in the case deliberated for more than 7 days, they couldn't reach a unanimous verdict. Judge William Sullivan eventually called a mistrial. According to reports from ABC News and other outlets, a lone holdout juror refused to vote for acquittal. ABC said the mood in the courtroom was tense when people learned that the case was going to be a mistrial. Here's Odyssey's Annie Fry out of KFTK in St. Louis, reacting to the courtroom proceedings on Friday, September 4th.
I want to interrupt. Can we interrupt and listen to the TV real quick? The judge is talking in the Clancy trial. Let me just
wanted to go over a couple of things.
I think he's talking to the jury.
First off, I want to remind you that you are required to follow my instructions on the law as I gave them to you. All right. I also want to, at this point, go over the instruction that I gave you about reasonable doubt. All right. And so, reasonable doubt. The burden is on the Commonwealth to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant is guilty of the charges made against her. What is proof beyond a reasonable doubt? Well, the term is often used and probably pretty well understood, though it's not easily defined. Proof beyond a reasonable doubt does not mean proof beyond all possible doubt. For everything in the lives of human.
The Dave Glover team out of Odyssey Station KMOX in St. Louis asked attorney Brad Young to weigh in on what was happening in the Clancy trial.
Brad, maybe you can make some heads or tails out of this. It's all kind of chaotic, but what we're seeing in this Lindsay Clancy case is that the judge is calling the jurors up to his bench for a sidebar with them one by one. And the defense attorney, Mr. Reddington, evidently just threw a hissy fit and was throwing things. Any idea what's... I've never heard of this, calling jurors up one by one.
Well, Lindsay Clancy is a part of the sidebar.
So the defendant's up there, too.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. Now, that completely changes my analysis, because I have heard of judges doing a one-by-one in what we call the hammer instruction. You've heard that term before. That's where the judge basically does everything but whack them with his mallet to say, go back in there and reach a decision, because we don't want a hung jury here. But I have never, ever heard of the defendant being a part of the sidebar.
Nor have I.
In that kind of situation.
Yeah, it's quite unusual from what I get. I mean, just looking at Twitter here, Brad, it's really hard to parse out what's happening. And then also listening to our ABC coverage in one ear during the break, they're trying to figure out what's going on, too. Let's see. I'm going to pot it up for a second here, because on CNN anyway, it looks like there's something happening in the courtroom. So let's see what ABC is saying. The live feed from the courtroom.
Yeah, they're waiting on something.
And I believe that is the defense attorney shuffling.
Well, while we're hearing that, I can tell you one thing. I've been in trials where the judge wanted to actually question the plaintiff or the defendant. And I, like Clancy's attorney, I threw a hissy fit, because if the judge asks an improper question...
we're going to continue to watch these live pictures inside...
Who do you object to?
Yeah.
Jury told the judge that they're inextricably deadlocked. He called them up one by one, and now, instead of just sending a hammer instruction to them as a note, he's telling them right now, this is what I told you before, get your butts back in there and get the job done one way or the other. I think this is a public hammer instruction, what we're seeing right here.
This is about the longest I've seen a judge keep a jury.
Yeah, but you know what? Even the judge knows, especially the judge knows, that this is a media circus, and he doesn't want to see the state have to go through this again one way or the other, because, frankly, you know, appeals are likely. Certainly, if there's a conviction, an appeal is likely. If there's an acquittal, that's not going to happen in most instances. But he wants this to be done, at least from the circuit court level. And the way you do it is keep hammering the jury to get back in there and get the job done. At the end of the day, like I said, I think it was on Tuesday, I think the issue isn't whether that she's guilty or innocent, but the issue from the jury is she guilty of first degree, second degree, or manslaughter? Mm. And that's what's got them all tied up.
Mm. Man, really interesting coverage. We have CNN up on the television here. We're able to see it. I don't know if you were able to see this, Brad, but the defense attorney had his chair positioned, like facing the jury, kind of staring them down as the judge was making these statements. And then the camera was zooming in on Lindsey Clancy as well, who eventually kind of turned her chin a bit and was clearly looking down at the jury. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, lots of games are played. I mean, and that's the subjective part of litigation, is that there's a lot of mind games. There's a lot of second guessing one way or the other. There's a lot of intimidation. There's a lot of posturing. And that happens. And sometimes when you watch stuff on TV, like in fiction, like The Lincoln Lawyer or something, they obviously exaggerate how much that exists, but it does truly exist.
Another expert, attorney Terry Connors, joined Odyssey station WBEN News and Talk in Buffalo to discuss the case this week before the mistrial was announced. He dove into why the jury might have been having so much trouble.
Terry, you have so much experience with this. What do you think this jury is struggling with?
Well, they're struggling right now with the issue with regard to not guilty by reason of insanity. That is going to be the most difficult thing for them to decide. That's what's causing the split. And in Massachusetts, the burden is on the Commonwealth to prove that she was sane at the time of the commission of the acts. That's what most of the trial was about. And that's no doubt what they're deliberating. That's no doubt what the nine women and the three men are stuck on right now in trying to make a decision about whether or not the prosecution has proved beyond a reasonable doubt that she was sane at the time of these horrendous killings.
The makeup of that jury that you just mentioned, nine women and three men, they get to go through and pick the jury, and both sides get to veto some and allow others. But I feel like a lot of attention is being placed on that just because of the makeup and because of what the case is really all about. How much weight do you put on having a majority women on that jury in what we saw yesterday?
It's interesting, Brian. You know, I've been doing this for a number of years, and the more you speculate about the content of a jury, the more opportunity for you to get it wrong. Now, the commentators have said, well, the women might be somewhat sympathetic to the situation because they would be more cognizant of the feelings that a woman might have when she's going through postpartum psychosis. Others have said, well, but the men would be less likely to judge. It's very difficult to speculate, and often when you do, you're wrong. But I would say this. The nine women are going to give you a very good perspective. They've not revealed the ages of the women, but they're going to give you the kind of insight that obviously no other sex can give you. And that's going to be very important. And I'm sure that went into it when the prosecution and the defense were deciding what challenges to exercise and who should remain on that jury. So it will be a factor, no question about it. But you won't know the division of debate until after the trial.
This jury has spent a lot of time with this case. And there's been a lot of back and forth about whether they should have been sequestered or not. I mean, they're going home at night and they are exposed to an awful lot of coverage of this trial. Is that impacting this?
Well, there's been a real shift in the psychology of sequestration. If you go back a number of years, you probably recall that most of the juries, especially in a capital case or in a murder case, were sequestered for that very reason, Susan. But the psychological evaluation now is, jurors are inconvenienced enough. They're kept out of their homes, away from their family. You have to trust them. They took an oath. You got to put them back into their comfortable environment, and it's going to be easier, and it's going to result in quicker deliberations. Can't say who's right or who's wrong, but that's the way the current status is. Let them go home. Let them go back to the community. Let them go back to their support groups. Tell them before they leave, as Judge Sullivan did, You cannot look at any extraneous information. You cannot read media accounts or even talk to your neighbors or your family members. But at least they'll be home in their own environment. That's the common perspective now.
And all of that might lead to better results in an initial trial. But what if there is a mistrial and another trial in this? And I'm thinking of another Massachusetts case, and that's the Karen Reed trial that got so much attention. All of a sudden, there's, all right, a different jury comes in, and there's another trial. And there's no way that a different jury now, you know, after all the attention, couldn't have been influenced by some of the outside noise around the Karen Reed case. And, you know, this has gotten similar attention. If there is a mistrial, what happens for a second trial?
Well, that's a great question. You might be surprised, though. I've been involved in second trials before. And while you and I and Susan follow these things very closely, in the voir dire, the jury selection process for the second trial, each of the jurors is asked specifically what their knowledge is about the previous case. Now, there'll be a delay. There'll be several months. It won't go right away if there is a second trial. And you'd be surprised how many jurors, at least in the inquiry by the judge and by the lawyer, say, I don't have that much information about it. I didn't follow it that closely. Now, whether or not they're telling the truth, you don't really know, but you'd be surprised at how many will say that I'm starting with a clean slate, and therefore I feel as though I can make this decision based upon the evidence that's produced in the courtroom.
For more on what comes next, attorney Sheena Foy of law firm Wersch, Hobbs & Merakian joined the Dana and Parks Show out of Odyssey Station KMBZ in Kansas City.
What do we make of the flurry of activity that we saw here today and the fireworks and the judge refusing really to change his position on what happened here during deliberations? That's question number one. And then question number two, do you think we'll hear from any of these jurors? Or are they going into hiding?
Well, there was definitely a... This case has really had a lot of very interesting twists. I think what the judge was doing today, what defense had asked, was for him to individually question the one juror who I believe on the note was named by number as being called out by the other jurors for not applying the law. And so what he was asking was for that judge, for Judge Sullivan, to further question that individual juror. And what Judge Sullivan was saying is, I'm not going to do further than what I've already done. Every juror told me that they were going to follow the law. And based off of that, that's only the inquiry I'm going to do. He then, defense counsel then sought to seek review of that decision by Judge Sullivan to not do further inquiry of that juror. And the High Court in Massachusetts denied to stay that request. And so Judge Sullivan was then free to issue the mistrial.
Okay, so wait, this went to a higher court and the higher court said no.
That they're not going to stay the proceeding. They're going to defer to Judge Sullivan.
What's your take on that, Sheena? The four-person foreman of this jury, I think it's a woman, but the four-person sent out a note saying we have a juror, and you're right, they did identify the juror by number, which I think is not supposed to happen, regardless, that is not following the law. Should the judge have pulled that one juror aside, or maybe there's a different argument here, pulled the four-person aside or sent a note back saying, what do you mean that this juror is not following the law? Give me an example.
So I think the judge is in a very hard position here. What happens in jury rooms is supposed to be the utmost confidence and secrecy. It's a sacred proceeding, but Ms. Clancy, she also has constitutional rights. And so without having the note in front of me, what I believe the content of the note was is that this juror, this particular juror, is refusing to follow the law in the reasonable doubt instruction, meaning that they have expressed doubts and they're not following through. And so, you know, I think that Mr. Reddington did everything right in zealously advocating for his client and pushing for that. In terms of the judge not seeking further inquiry, I don't necessarily think that that's going to be an issue that an appellate court would reverse him on. And so I think he was just erring on the side of caution. And there was nothing in that note that would have said, you know, there was any wrongdoing going on other than potentially that one juror didn't feel like the doubt he had was sufficient, or, you know, it's kind of a vague instruction, like there, what is reasonable doubt? And so these 11 people had one view of it, and did that one juror have a different view of it, or was he really not following the law? And so, you know, I would have done the same thing as Mr. Reddington and pushed for further inquiry, but ultimately I don't think that the judge made the wrong call.
Where do we go from here? This just starts all over?
So the district attorney, and I was able to watch a little bit of his press conference before getting on the phone with you guys, it was interesting to me that he did not immediately commit to a retrial. Mm-hmm. Now, his tone was very fiery, and I do anticipate they will retry. But if this did hang 11-1, either for a straight acquittal or not guilty by the reason of insanity, which is what it appears it has, I think that that is a shocking blow to the Commonwealth, and they really should evaluate their evidence based off of that verdict. Now, he gives himself some wiggle room there on what maybe they're going to recharge it as. The sentiments that he gave, even though he didn't commit to a retrial, certainly indicate that they are going to retry her for intentional malice acts. I mean, he made comments about, you know, this was a brutal murder. She was in her right mind. And so, you know, Mr. Reddington indicated that he's ready to try it next week, and they have an obligation to try her speedily. And so I think they're not going to have as much time to fix their case as they might think. And they really, I think, should hopefully listen to the comments of the jury if they stick around about maybe they're seeing their case a little too one-sided.
Is it true that a second trial or a retrial favors the prosecution?
You know, there is that sentiment out there. I don't necessarily think it strongly favors either. It gives both sides a chance to correct errors or, you know, move forward with things a little bit differently. The state has the benefit of maybe knowing what the playbook for the defense is. But in this case, I don't think it was that much of a secret.
Why not just settle? Why not just come together, the Commonwealth and the defense attorney, and say, look, no one wants to put the families through this again, and come to some agreement for some punishment?
So that really is a question for the prosecutor. The prosecutor is in charge of what offers are given. The defense does not dictate that. And so the interview given by District Attorney Cruz shows that their office really has been unwilling to offer anything other than a malice murder charge. Maybe this process shows them that their case isn't nearly as strong as they thought, and there can be that conversation. Again, when I was on earlier with you, I said I'm not sure who's pushing for a malice murder conviction when the surviving victim's families do seem like they are sympathetic to Lindsay and would be fine with her being placed in a mental institution for a plea of NGRI. So those are all things that the state has to reconsider. And, you know, I do think he gave himself a little breathing room by not immediately saying we're going to retry this case.
As Minnesota's State Fair was bringing food, fun, and music to the state this week, a disturbing shooting broke out in its largest city on Wednesday, September 2nd. Here's WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities reporting on the incident the following day, Thursday, September 3rd.
Two civilians are dead and several Minneapolis police officers are hurt after a shooting yesterday afternoon at a Loring Park apartment building. The city says just after 4:30 p.m., police responded to 911 calls about gunshots at Shoreline Plaza Apartments, that's formerly known as Loring Towers, on East Grant Street near Nicollet Avenue. They found multiple people who'd been shot in the lobby and heard more gunfire.
Raina Raker says she lives in the building where it happened and was coming out of her apartment when the shooting unfolded.
I literally was walking down the stairs as the situation was going on. I heard swearing, I heard cursing, and then I just heard shot, 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 shot.
Following the sound to an upper floor, police were met with a haze, which a department spokesman said significantly limited their visibility. That haze caused four officers adverse effects, but the city didn't share further details. Both police and the suspect fired shots. Three officers were hurt in the shooting. One was undergoing surgery last night, but Governor Tim Walz says all are expected to recover. Mayor Jacob Frey saying the three officers hurt in the shooting likely saved many lives.
Two officers were hit by gunfire, one in the leg, the other with two bullets to the abdomen. But for their heroic work, the death toll would have been far higher.
In all, HCMC says it took in seven patients. One died, six are still being treated, their conditions are unknown. Another person died at the scene. The shooter is also dead. Police are unsure how he died and aren't naming him right now. Two more officers were hurt when their squad car got into a crash while responding to the scene. At least 10 other law enforcement agencies assisted Minneapolis police. The BCA is investigating. Chris Miller, who lives in the building, isn't sure what comes next.
Don't know if I have a place to live yet. Don't know if I can get back home yet. Don't know what's going to happen.
And here's further reporting from CCO on Thursday.
The area around the complex is still very much closed off as the investigation into yesterday's shooting continues, with police confirming six people were injured, including three police officers, and that three people, including the shooter, are dead. This has left people still living here at the complex on edge, with some still waiting to get back inside.
I don't talk to nobody, say nothing to nobody in here, but I don't feel like it's safe.
I heard one person got in through talking to BCA. I just asked, and I guess I'm not able to go, probably around 10.
We do know the suspect was in the process of being evicted from Shoreline Plaza. There's still no word on what exactly led up to the shooting or who the victims are. In downtown Minneapolis, I'm Taylor Rivera, News Talk 830 WCCO.
Police responded just after 4:30 p.m. to 911 calls about gunshots at an apartment building on East Grant Street near Nicollet Avenue. Both police and the suspect fired shots at one another on an upper floor. HCMC says it took in seven patients. One died and six are still being treated. Their conditions are unknown. Another person died at the scene. The shooter is also dead and police haven't said how he died and they haven't released his identity. Three officers were hurt in the shooting. One was in surgery last night. Governor Tim Walz says all are expected to recover. Two more officers got hurt in a car crash responding to the scene. The Minnesota BCA is investigating. Mark Fry, News Talk 830 WCCO.
WCCO provided another update with details from the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, or BCA.
I'm Laura Oakes. Minnesota BCA Superintendent Drew Evans sharing some new details of yesterday's mass shooting in downtown Minneapolis. Evans says the suspected shooter, 35-year-old Carlton Neal Johnson, first fired his gun on the first floor of the apartment at 15 East Grant Street.
The first shooting occurred outside of the building during a custody exchange of a child believed to belong to the suspect in this case with a woman that he had a prior relationship with.
He says Johnson then shot someone who works in the building at close range and shot another worker, then went to the ninth floor.
That is where they encountered the suspect and there was an exchange of gunfire at that time. The suspect died and two officers were shot and injured. A third officer was injured, unrelated to the exchange of gunfire.
Evan says the mother of the child involved in the custody exchange was shot in the leg and the child was unharmed and removed safely. Again, Evan says the shooter died in the exchange of gunfire with police, all of it captured on surveillance video. Hennepin County Attorney Mary Moriarty, meanwhile, sharing additional information related to the shooting and the shooter's behavior leading to it.
In a statement, she said on June 25th, police responded to a call about Carlton Johnson displaying a firearm to another person. She said police later learned that Johnson had a legal permit to carry and that he displayed the weapon, but it did not leave his waistband. She said police submitted the case, but it was determined it could not be charged because of insufficient evidence. She went on to say her office did flag the conduct for an extreme risk protection order screening, but found, again, there was not enough evidence to move forward. Susie Jones, News Talk 830 WCCO.
Meanwhile, residents of the building were finally allowed back in just a few hours ago as investigators worked through the night and combed the building for evidence. Fatigue and frustration setting in for many, like Anthony White.
Minneapolis has to change. We got too much national news and all that.
Then more information was released about the alleged shooter.
I'm Mark Fry. We're learning more about the suspect in yesterday's deadly mass shooting in downtown Minneapolis. He's being widely identified as 35-year-old Carlton Johnson II. This individual says he knew Johnson and that he was facing an eviction from the Shoreline Plaza due to numerous reported incidents in the past year, including incidents where Johnson brandished a firearm at apartment staff and residents.
He was mad, but he had to think about it because you can't show your gun. He had a gun license, and he just kept showing his gun, like, to people. And then he put his gun on one of the managers there. So he had to go. It was leading up to it, and then he starts saying he was going to kill people, put it on Facebook. But I thought he was playing. He always played like that.
Three people, including the suspect, died. Of the six who were injured, three were police officers, two of which were shot. Interim Minneapolis Police Chief Bill Peterson.
I'm truly sickened by this level of violence. That feeling is tempered only by the courageous actions of the Minneapolis police officers who responded without hesitation.
WCCO News Talk's Jason DeRusha discussed the shooting from the state fair.
We were in our regular fair coverage yesterday when once again we're faced with a challenge and a problem as a society. Are landlords going to be afraid to evict someone now? After the mass shooting in downtown Minneapolis. And the new information we learned over the last hour from the BCA is that the beginning incident that started this mass shooting was the shooter shooting the woman who was dropping off his child. And these are stories that we have told far too many times. Custody dispute, domestic violence. Usually it's a man who is the problem, and in this case, a handgun. In this case, so many warning signs. I think part of the question that we're going to be trying to get to the bottom of over the next days and weeks after, you know, two people killed by this guy before he was killed, two police officers shot. That's the update we're waiting for in the next couple of minutes for the mayor of Minneapolis and the interim police chief. But this guy was threatening people with a gun in his building. It's part of why he was being evicted, according to court record. Now, you have the right, for sure, to defend yourself, and this guy was defending himself through the legal process. But don't we as a society have an overriding urge to take the guns away from this guy? He had all of the ingredients. Custody dispute, ongoing threats. You know, not just like hearsay threats, like evidence of threats. And then a relatively recent permit to carry that was issued this year, according to the reporting I saw today from the Star Tribune. Just so many things where you say, like, we have all these debates about what we should do to change our gun laws. What about red flag laws? What about this? What about that? In this case, we're talking about a handgun. So no gun related law would have addressed this situation. But you did have people who were saying, like, hey, this guy, he's a problem. And he still got a permit to carry? Like, what was the background check? What was the research? It's so frustrating because we could have, you know, yes, the two people who were killed by this guy in the apartments right near the convention center, right near Loring Park, they were residents. They were residents on the ninth floor, the same floor of his apartment. I don't know. It's an incident like this that, once again, like, are we going to do this once a year, right? Like, once a year, we're going to have a mass shooting that's going to bring up this whole debate, and everyone's going to go in their corners and make their same old usual arguments. And in this case, was it more of a matter of the system doesn't move quickly enough? Are we too hesitant to take away the guns? Yes. I don't think, and I'm not proposing that we take away everybody's guns, but here you have a, you just, when you look at the ingredients of what we knew about this guy, it just, to me, it makes no sense.
It's more than just Republicans, though.
Yeah.
This is a bigger problem than just that.
Well, I mean, definitely in Minnesota, we had Democrat, DFL trifecta control, and they couldn't pass any changes to gun laws either. And I get it. Like, we've made it a situation where the NRA has sort of won this debate by saying, if you give an inch, they'll take a mile. And that's become just sort of accepted belief. And there's some truth to it. Like, I understand why that is the dogma. But I do think, like, we're a country of 50 states. And some states should be doing some experimentation in this area. We are standing by. We're expecting a news conference any minute now. We're expecting a news conference any minute now from the Minneapolis police. And so
we're hoping they're going to update the conditions of the officers that were injured yesterday. Yeah.
The actual headlines that we learned today, the actual new information, is we did learn the names of the two who were killed. And think about this. Like, they were two 60-plus-year-old men. A 63-year-old and a 61-year-old. They both lived on the same floor of this 35-year-old Carlton Neal Johnson II. These two officers are still in the hospital. Their condition is described as stable, but we don't know too much about their injuries. But we know that, you know, this stuff, this is the second eviction-related homicide in our community over the last couple months. We had another situation where in St. Paul, where a guy was being evicted. He was mad that he couldn't break his parking contract.
Yeah.
And they wanted him to pay, I don't know, it was like $50 or $60. It was a tiny amount of money. And instead he went into the leasing office and just executed the three people in the office.
We had a mutual friend of ours that was out here yesterday as this was going on, that owns or manages some apartment buildings, and talked about his concern in hearing that this was somebody that was being evicted that had turned around and started shooting people. Yeah. And so I would think anybody that is in that business or in that area and, you know, hears these stories is starting to wonder about how strict do they want to be about the rules. Because if this is going to be how it is, that people get evicted and lose it and start shooting people, I don't want to be in those shoes.
And in this case, we only know from court records that this eviction process was part of his story, but an ongoing custody dispute seems to be maybe the main driver here, because we know from other court records. I mean, man, aren't you sick of this, though? Like, oh, of course. Like, of course. This guy had a court record a mile long, record of threats, custody dispute, and somehow this year he was still able to get a permit to carry. And do we need more? Is this something that we could agree on where you say, like, all right, could we say if you have a, you know, restraining order or a custody dispute, you can't get a permit to carry? Now, would he have gotten a gun anyway? I don't know, right? Like, we can what if, or this wouldn't solve that, or what if he did that? We could do it over and over and over. But this case to me seemed very potentially preventable. Texters coming in, and you're welcome to join the conversation, 651-461-9226. As we wait for Minneapolis officials to provide an update on the condition of these officers. Because what heroism there yesterday as well. You know, knowing there's an active shooter situation, and again, these Minneapolis police officers go running in. They go running in. How much violence and national news does this state need before we understand the city council members have blood on their hands? I do think that, like, we always want to find someone to blame in this situation. And blaming the city council, what what could the city council, like, I'm no fan of the DSA wing of the Minneapolis City Council, but what could the city council have done that would have made a difference here? We had a court proceeding going on with this guy. We had an eviction proceeding going on. There's all of this stuff going on. So I'm just not sure. I'm not sure that there's an obvious political, like, oh, we got to blame this. We need to put people in prison for making threats with a gun, brandishing, etc. We have red flags now. No one used them here, I guess. Yet he made many threats. Yeah, that was my initial question. Because this seems to me like 100% example where the red flag law should have been triggered. Should have been triggered.
So
and
then
why
the question,
wasn't it?
So, well, then the question becomes, is the public educated enough in knowing when that's applicable and how to go about getting it applied? Because I'm not, you know, I'm just being honest. I'm not sure.
I don't know either.
I mean, you know, we could look it up and probably figure it out relatively quickly, but not everybody has that necessarily that advantage to them.
All right, we are live at the State Fair. Got lots of fun show planned for you today, but we're starting with a serious topic for sure as we're standing by for City of Minneapolis officials to give us an update on those two police officers who were shot. We know that three officers were injured yesterday. One was caught up in some sort of smoke or haze. This in a shooting where we know a guy killed two people and then unleashed on others, including two police officers. So that's what we know. Over the last hour or so, we learned that the people who were killed in the building were neighbors of his on the ninth floor. The State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension said, we don't know for sure if the people who were shot were targeted. So the way this all went down, if you're just joining and just sort of plugging back into what's going on, is the State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension says that this guy went to do like a child, he has a 4-year-old child. There was like a custody exchange outside the building, and he shoots the woman. At this point, I don't think the BCA clarified if the woman was just supervising the child or if it was the mother of the child or what the relationship was. But she was shot. The child ran, and the child is okay. Then he goes in the building, shoots two people who work for the building, goes up to the ninth floor, shoots and kills two neighbors, and then police get up there, climb up the stairs. Think of the courage of these police officers, right? You know you have an active shooting situation going down. These officers climb up the stairs to the ninth floor because you don't want to, I mean, you imagine like that moment when the elevator door opens and this guy is maybe standing there. So they come up the stairs and they are both shot. There were multiple officers who came up, at least three, but then the gunfire exchange. And we don't know, at this point, I don't think it was clear as to who killed the guy, the shooter in this case. Did the officers shoot and kill him? Did he shoot himself? All we know is he died in the exchange of gunfire with Minneapolis police officers. They have surveillance video of everything because there was surveillance cameras on every floor of this building. So that's the latest as far as what is happening. But Mayor of Minneapolis and the interim police chief were supposed to start a news conference around 3 o'clock. And at this point, hasn't started yet. Oh, I'm being told that we know that police shot him. So that's the update from our newsroom saying that the medical examiner confirmed.
Because there were multiple speculative reports last night that he had killed himself. So that's an interesting detail to get confirmed by police.
Yeah, but because they shot him, is that the bullet that killed him, I guess would be the question. But our newsroom is saying it was confirmed by the medical examiner that police shot him. So that's sort of where we're at. What the official BCA statement was over the last hour is that he died in an exchange of gunfire. So the BCA wasn't that specific about how that all went down. Ultimately, like, I don't really care. It doesn't really matter to me how that went down. Obviously, when you do an investigation, that's part of what you do, is trying to figure out exactly what happened. But at this point, you know, we just don't have anything from the city of Minneapolis yet. So we're standing by for that. Lots of texts coming in at 651-461-9226. And I do think this is maybe, you know, this is the part of the story that we often don't talk about enough. And that is the risk involved with out-of-control men in sort of these domestic violence relationships with women. Because that's what precipitated this. And the texts are saying, how many stories do we see of women who file restraining orders or alert police to threats to their lives to only end up dead? We need an interception point for people who are clear threats. Does anyone really think, like, we do enough to protect women who are in a bad place with a guy? I certainly don't. And to think that in this case, we had a custody situation where the latest reporting that I saw is that his child was taken away from him and was in the custody of the county for a while. So I don't know. I think that's a fair question to say. When we have these gun conversations, we tend to focus on the type of weapon that we're going to allow or the number of rounds that we're going to allow. But the reality is, you know, on a deeper level, we're leaving, especially women, in very dangerous situations and without a clear way for them to be taken care of. Lots of texts coming in.
And it's obviously all the more complicated when there's a child involved, right? Because you hear all the time in situations where there's domestic threats, well, why don't they just leave?
Yeah.
Well, if there's a child involved, it's not always that simple.
It's not always that simple.
And so is there a way that we as a society, as a culture, can do better, need to do better in providing them safe spaces where, you know, the needs of the child are also looked after, but, you know, there's safety provided to a woman in a situation that's clearly dangerous?
I mean, I just think about the timeline here. That he was served with an eviction notice on June 16th. On June 25th, he was accused of threatening a resident with his firearm. On August 3rd, his attorney said, no, he never, you know, he didn't do it. And so we've just been waiting for that case to work its way through. In the meantime, this guy's got a gun, got a handgun, legally had that handgun. You think, like, I don't know, man. Like, it to me, we have to do better than that. We have to do better. Texter, does the system take care of men when it comes to custody battle and financial divorce settlements? And you wonder why they get pissed off and get violent. I mean, that's an absolutely ridiculous comment. Is the custody situation in this country fair? Well, if it's not fair, like letting that escalate and fester, getting a gun and shooting someone, no, that's not a... That's not the logical end of that scenario. It just isn't. It just isn't. My sister is a domestic violence subject expert, says a texter. She works for the United Nations fighting domestic violence. She says women are at most risk when the restraining order is filed or when they leave the house. I think that's 100% true. And so I would like to hear that as part of the discussion over what we do with gun laws in this country. Because it's not as simple as saying we should restrict this gun or we should provide this mental health support. How many homicides, how many shootings could we prevent if we could do something better about domestic violence? And don't both sides this like, oh, guys get screwed too. Men are the ones who are taking the guns and shooting because they're pissed off about a situation. It is very rare that a woman is the one who does that. So let's deal with the lethal risk first. And yeah, then if we want to have a debate about, like, is the divorce system or the child custody system fair, we can have that debate. But I'm not that concerned about it. I'm concerned about people being killed, and I'm concerned about our law enforcement officers having to rush in, which, again, you look at this scenario and say, these cops, what they did yesterday, I mean, it is, we've seen scenarios where officers sit there and... You think of Uvalde, where officers were like waiting and waiting for the right moment and waiting for backup. In this case, these cops didn't wait. They ran up the stairs because somebody was shooting. And two of them are in the hospital right now. I mean, it's important to remember that as well. We'll get an update on their condition, or maybe we won't. That's sort of what happens when you stand by for a news conference for the city.
Are we doing enough to make sure incidents like the one that happened at Shoreline Plaza don't happen again? After the recent tragedy, people are asking questions.
Meanwhile, a lot of people questioning why there was no extreme risk protection order against Johnson, which could have temporarily barred him from having a gun in the first place.
Johnson obtained a permit to carry a firearm from Hennepin County in June of this year. Despite his known criminal history, documented reports of threatening behavior toward neighbors, and other instances of erratic behavior, Executive Director of the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association, Jeff Potts, says identifying people who may be at risk of violent behavior is very challenging.
That requires law enforcement to have relationships in the community. It requires the community to step up and help law enforcement or social services identify people who they think may be potentially in a position where their mental condition is such that they could do something like this.
Hennepin County Attorney Mary Moriarty has expressed support for the state's red flag laws, saying they're a powerful tool if people know what they are and how to access them. Laura Oakes, News Talk 830 WCCO.
To end our show, we have coverage of the shooting from the Adam and Jordana show, also out of WCCO News and Talk.
Another awful event happening in Minneapolis where we had this mass shooting in an apartment complex. Three people dead, including the shooter. Three officers injured, two who were shot. Thankfully, the good news in all that is those officers are going to be okay. But I had no idea. I was at volleyball last night, Jor, when I saw your text and I immediately something about Minneapolis, and I immediately logged on to the news and was just heartbroken to see another just awful, awful story.
For me, I was actually at home, and I live downtown now. So my daughter and I, all of a sudden the sirens exploded because we live not far from HCMC. And HCMC is where all of the high-level trauma victims and all of the gunshot victims were taken. And we heard the sound of the siren. She goes, "Mom, what's going on?" I said, "Okay, let's find out." And we did some digging, and her dad works at HCMC, so he was keeping us updated. And then I turned on WCCO radio and I was listening to Steve Simpson and Susie Jones. Great coverage, by the way. And here's what I thought. I thought, not again. Because 2 years ago, just a week ago, 2 years and a week, Adam and I were out here when the Annunciation shooting happened. We obviously blew up our show. It happened like at 8:45 in the morning. By 9 a.m. we went on. And we were covering, once again, a mass shooting in Minneapolis. And yesterday, I turned on the news, or I turned on CCO radio when I was at home, and I'm listening to Jason at the state fair. You could hear the fair noises behind him. Yeah. And Jason DeRussia is sitting up here just like we were, and I was thinking how hard that is for Jason. It's hard to be at the fair and cover breaking news, especially something
awful
as tragic
like right.
as a mass shooting and possibly officers down, which is absolutely devastating. And I thought, here we are again.
Yep.
I cannot believe this is happening was my first thought. But then, of course, this is happening because nothing changed after Annunciation. And we still have a gun problem in this country. We still have a mental illness problem in this country. We still have red flag laws that aren't used enough. We still have people that don't intervene or get help for themselves. And everybody is vulnerable.
Yeah, my takeaway, and again, each, sadly, it happens so often, and each situation, of course, is different, and there's still obviously a lot to know about what happened yesterday and what led to it, but all the reporting I've read was that this individual who committed this shooting, there were red flags about this guy.
Yes.
He was a menace at this apartment building he was living at. He was harassing neighbors. He showed his gun often. And my question at the top of my head is, how in the hell does a guy like this, who clearly is a violent person, who clearly is not right, how is he continue? And he was evicted from there in June.
Yes.
And I don't know what kind of process that was underway to get him out. But my question is, at what point does somebody commit crimes like that or harass neighbors like that is that person actually arrested and taken into custody?
And he wasn't. He was roaming the streets with a permit to carry.
Apparently,
so that is a huge problem. And I was also listening because, you know, it's funny. I live downtown now, and I looked at apartments in that area. It's not, you know, it's a mixed area, but there are some lovely condos and lovely apartments there. I live, you know, less than a mile away right now, which is what we decided on. But I was listening to some of the residents of the building. And a reporter asked one of the residents, they were downstairs being evacuated, do you feel safe going back in the building and going to sleep tonight? He said, I never feel safe in this building. He said, we have been asking for better security in this building, but, you know, there is some low-income housing there, and, you know, housing is hard to come by in Minneapolis. And he said, we knew this was just a powder keg, like something was going to happen, and he never felt safe. And my heart just went out to him thinking, it must be so challenging to go to bed or to walk into where you live, your home, every day and not feel safe. And I just feel so bad for the people of that neighborhood and certainly of that building.
And I believe that person, but I also was reading another article about the story, and they had talked to a nearby restaurant owner who said that building had recently gone under new ownership and that the new owners of that building actually had been doing a better job of cleaning things up, and I think that person used getting the riffraff out. Again, it's just another case where we're going to have to look into the texter here. Adam, the shooter wasn't violent. Scary, but not violent. Well, if you're threatening somebody and you have a gun
and saying he's going to kill somebody in his life,
I characterize that as violent.
Yes,
but I mean,
yes.
Point taken in that, at what point can a person be taken into custody?
Mm-hmm.
And again, we're going to have to get to those answers. We're going to have to ask those questions, get those answers from authorities as to why a person like this, who clearly exhibited tendencies that, in my opinion, were violent, how a person like that was, I guess, not at some point intervened with, either by authorities or somebody else. Again, these are all questions that are going to have to come up and be answered. But certainly the best news out of it are these officers who were injured and the other people who were injured, who are hopefully going to make a full recovery. Our hearts go out to the two people who were murdered yesterday in that apartment shooting. And we'll have a lot more questions, hopefully, that will get answered. All right.
Adam Carter and Jordana Green also had veteran journalist Eric Escola on their show this week, and they discussed the Shoreline Plaza shooting.
Last night, when everything went down with the shooting, I was in my apartment downtown, and I said to my daughter, who's grown now, I said, I feel like I should go down there. And she looks at me, she goes, are you insane? And I was like, well, I mean, it's breaking news. And she's like, Mom, but we had quality reporters on site. We had Steve Simon, but it's that instinct, like you want to be where the news is. And I talked myself off that ledge, but I don't think that instinct ever goes away. It certainly doesn't with you.
I'm three blocks from that intersection where I live in Loring Park.
Oh, you do?
And I just crossed that intersection Tuesday.
it's
close, yeah.
Were you home at the time of the shooting?
I was.
So you experienced all of this last night?
Oh, yeah. I heard the police helicopter. I don't know if it was a police helicopter.
Chopper.
Or if news. It was a Channel 5 or 11, or 4, whatever.
It's tough.
But, and one of the, and I didn't get the guy's name, but one of the CARE 11 reporters made a very good statement that I think probably should be repeated. At the time of these incidents, half of what you hear reported is probably inaccurate.
Mm.
And it isn't because they're trying to be inaccurate. It's that they're filling time, audience is changing over, people are just coming on board. You want to keep the live coverage going, but you may be having to tap dance for a while.
Sure.
And we all know what that
leads to.
Thank you so much for listening to this True Crime Roundup from the On Deadline podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to KNX News in Los Angeles, The Annie Fry Show out of KFTK in St. Louis, The Dave Glover Show out of KMOX in St. Louis, A New Morning out of WBEN in Buffalo, The Dana and Parks Show out of KMBZ in Kansas City, and WCCO News and Talk in the Twin Cities, including Jason DeRussia and The Adam and Jordana Show. You can find these programs on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts. You can find these true crime roundups by subscribing to the On Deadline podcast, the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, or the Bitter Academia podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
People say, I got you, all the time. Dads say it to their kids the first time they ride a bike. Friends say it to other friends when they buy them lunch. It's a good thing when someone's got you. It's especially good when someone's got you with important things like your health. And that's where WeShare's got you. We got you with a massive nationwide network of over 1 million doctors, which means you can likely keep your current doctor you know and trust. We got you with affordable prices that can save individuals up to $5,000 annually compared to traditional insurance, and save families even more. And we've got you with over 68,000 CVS Caremark pharmacies across the country. If you're tired of overpriced health insurance bills, come visit us at WeShareHealth.org or call 1-888-WeShare. Other smart Americans are making the switch every day. In a world filled with companies that cost you, it's nice to have one that's got you. WeShareHealth. We got you.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Diamond Dynasty has all new Red Diamond cards and World Baseball Classic content in MLB The Show 26. Collect your favorites and compete against the best. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
What you're listening to presumably doesn't suck, so neither should your sound system. Sonos lets you listen seamlessly from room to room. Same great sound, expertly tuned, astonishingly clear. It's not magic, but it's not not magic.